Welcome into the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by the College Corner. I'm Neil McCready. Today on the show, Sam Spiegelman of Rivals.com will join. We'll talk about Ole Miss recruiting. We'll talk about what's going on at LSU, how that might impact things, a little bit about Dan Mullen and Florida, kind of around the SEC a little bit, and then a pretty deep dive into Arch Manning, the latest with Arch, the latest on what Sam thinks might happen there. He was at Ole Miss not that long ago, as you guys know. Talked about that visit a little bit. And then we finished up talking about Jordan Allen, the safety out of Lafayette, Louisiana, who visited Ole Miss for the LSU game. So we'll get to all of that, a lot of recruiting content with Sam Spiegelman of Rivals.com. But first, I want to tell you a little bit about the College Corner. It's your one-stop rebel shop, two locations in the Jackson area in Ridgeland. It's next to Fleet Feet in Flowood. It's next to Half Shell. If you don't live in Jackson, it's okay. Go to collegecornerstore.com. Plus, you can find them on Facebook and Instagram. Whether you're tailgating in Oxford or home gating with friends and family, the College Corner has you covered for game day, the largest selection of Rebel gear in central Mississippi. We're also brought to you by Daniel Barfield, Barfield Wealth Management. Founded in 2000, they've been serving individuals and businesses in the Oxford and North Mississippi area now for more than two decades. Daniel carries both CFP and CPA designations. He's affiliated with the Advisors Resource Council. It's a registered investment advisory firm with offices in Oxford, New Orleans, Dallas, and surrounding areas. He and his staff offer comprehensive financial planning, including investment management, estate and tax planning, insurance planning, business retirement plans, and more. 662-236-6454 or visit his site, barfieldwealthmanagement.com. We're also brought to you by Billy's Small Batch Bacon. My friend Bill William Stitt at Billy's has spent more than 30 years in the restaurant and hospitality business, and he has mastered the art of bacon. He's perfected the bacon curing process. He says it takes 8 days to perfectly cure bacon, not seven, not nine, eight. You can find out more by visiting his restaurant, Old 27 Grill, there in Fairhope, Alabama, or you can go to billysbacon.com, B-I-L-L-E-S, bacon.com. Try it today. Order 5 pounds or more, and you get a free Billy's Bacon hat. We're also brought to you by Alpha Specialties, 1670 Highway 80 in Pearl, Mississippi. It's your trailer-specific professional. It's the premium trailer dealership in Mississippi. They've got Load Trail. They've also got Hallmark Cargo trailers. They can work with third parties to have game day trailers, concession trailers built just for you. Spare tires and wheels starting at just $100. A full selection of trailer parts and accessories, hitches, winches, straps, and more. 601-932-9798 or alphaofms.com. Brought to you by Muddy Water Camo. Go to muddywateroutdoors.com. Enter the promo code REBELGROVE. Get 35% off of all the heated jackets, heated vests, anything else on the site. Free shipping on orders of more than $100 as well. Again, muddywateroutdoors.com, promo code REBELGROVE. John Jennings of Jennings Executive Search sponsors us as well. John specializes in the recruitment of accounting, finance, strategy, corporate development, and data science professionals from the staff to C-level in all industries. So whether you're a small business owner who needs a finance leader, whether you work in private equity or run a team at a Fortune 500 company, John and his recruitment team of former public accountants will simplify the process by presenting you with a short list of only the most qualified candidates. It's John Jennings on LinkedIn. That's J-O-N. Or email john@jenningsexec.com or call 404-536-3000. And last but not least, brought to you by Joey Erickson, Heron Gear Autoplex. Let him help you find the vehicle you're looking for at a price you can afford. Choose from a full selection of new Chevy, BMW, Lexus, and Infiniti, or get a great deal on numerous brands of reliable pre-owned vehicles. Give Joey a call or a text on his cell at 662-571-2367. Tell him what you're looking for or stop by 1685 High Street in Jackson to test drive that new or used vehicle you've been looking for. All right, we're going to now talk some recruiting. A lot of good stuff. Sam Spiegelman, Rivals.com. I think you guys will enjoy this. Here's Sam Spiegelman. Sam Spiegelman, Rivals.com, kind enough to spend some time with us here on the Soft Verbal Podcast. Sam, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Neil.
Let's start off with Ole Miss. There's a handful of things I want to get to. I want to get to Arch Manning. I want to get to your thoughts on what's happening with the LSU search and all of those things. But here we are. It's November the 2nd as we record this. So this early signing period, about a month and a half away. The coaching carousel still has to turn. There's a lot of things that could happen. But your kind of general thoughts on this Ole Miss class as it is put together at this point?
You know, it's about halfway full, top 30, which, you know, looks good. You know, you can't help but go up and down the class and wonder where the quarterback is. Obviously, it's you know, it's been a lot of Devin Brown buzz as the USC search goes on. And wow, Devin Brown, the skill set to eventually possibly replace Matt Corral is just lights out as one of the best quarterbacks in the country. But, you know, again, the class has some bright spots like most classes do, especially regionally. But, you know, you look at like Jacarius Clayton is a really talented edge defender. Larry Simmons is a playmaker. Obviously, Dortch is a two-way guy that can play DB or receiver and just brings that speed to the Ole Miss offense that we've seen. Quinshon Judkins and Jarrell Stenson are two guys, obviously, from Alabama with some intrigue, possible risers. And Bryson Hurst is your in-state, you know, classic franchise offensive tackle. But I don't know. I think there are obviously, if you look in-state, there are obviously big targets that are still, whether they're committed elsewhere, positions of need. It just feels like this class kind of lacks the superstar power. It just, you know, I don't know. Ole Miss is having a ton of success, and we were talking before we hopped on to the press and record button, but maybe it's, you know, they're so focused on the season that maybe the recruiting will have to come in the next couple of weeks as we inch closer and closer to the first signing period. And Lane Kiffin has a habit out of pulling out stunts late. You kind of almost expect it or kind of almost need it, I think, for this 2022 class to kind of add some of that firepower toward the end, though.
Yeah, you're right. You know, Kiffin does have a reputation for closing strong. That's what he's kind of always done in recruiting. But are you a little surprised that here we are in early November, Ole Miss, as we record this, is 6-2 through two-thirds of the season. They're ranked 15th in the country. The only two losses are at Alabama, at Auburn. They've beaten Arkansas. They beat Tennessee. They beat LSU. They've gotten these wins, yet they don't seem to have that big-time traction in recruiting. I mean, they're doing okay, like you said, but there's not that star power. If I had told you before the year, hey, they'll be 6-2 at the two-thirds poll, would you have guessed they'd be a little more traction in recruiting?
100%. I mean, conversely, look at Georgia. Georgia, you know, they might have a reputation for these number one recruiting classes, but they certainly didn't start the year in this range. And in, you know, with the success of vaulting to number one, you know, you get Bear Alexander, you know, 4 months before he was set to announce, and you're now the heavy favorite to possibly flip Jaheim Singletary or Julian Humphrey, you know, these two elite DBs from Florida and Texas, respectively. And that comes along with the territory of, you know, exceeding expectations or rather reaching expectations. And Ole Miss certainly fits one of those two categories. You would think that with the most, you know, one of the most high-powered offenses, not only in the SEC but the country, you would be in a better spot with quarterbacks. Quarterbacks tend to commit before their senior seasons. So, you know, Lane is going to have to do a Lane Kiffin sort of thing to get his quarterback. You never want to skip a cycle at that position. And you know, it's Mississippi. There's athletes everywhere you look. But like you said, you know, they're 6-2. They should be recruiting at more than just getting the guys in Mississippi. That's expected. They should have some national power. It feels like we're waiting for it at this point, but they certainly, it has not translated as you might have expected.
You mentioned quarterbacks. Justin Martin was a guy they looked at. I think they could have pushed a little harder for Martin if they'd wanted to. I think they really want Devin Brown. I know it's not your territory per se, but you see some film, you talk to people who watch film. How good is Brown, and what do you kind of hear just in a roundabout way of what ultimately might be his decision?
Yeah, you know, I've gotten to see Devin now at the Elite 11, and he ended up being one of our biggest risers in the 2022 class after that event. You know, it's so hard to judge quarterbacks in a camp setting, yet Devin Brown found a way to honestly, it's a lazy comparison, and it might be because I'm on this podcast, but you just think about his skill set and how he translates into this offense that Jeff Lebby runs. And I mean, the upside is through the roof. Now, you know, he's a kid from Utah. And he's committed to USC out west, and that makes a ton of sense given USC's background and history of turning out quarterbacks. But we don't know who the head coach is going to be, and I think you'd have to wait and see what kind of offense and play caller and scheme fit. And you know, for quarterbacks, I like how quarterbacks go about their recruitments. They usually don't rush to make decisions like maybe I would. You know, I would decommit and open things up right away. But quarterbacks are way smarter than someone like me. They're going to wait and see. So it gives me the impression he's comfortable going to USC so long that they check the boxes with his coaching needs. And if not, I suspect that he's obviously has a fantastic plan B in Ole Miss, and he knows that he could compete for the job once Matt Corral hears his name get called this spring. And he knows the offensive coordinator, he knows Lane Kiffin, and he's going to have to do some comparing and contrasting. But, you know, in Ole Miss, like you said, missed on Justin Martin. Maybe they should have pushed harder, but maybe they feel good about Devin Brown behind closed doors. But I'd hope they have at least a second or third option somewhere to call as December gets closer.
On Monday, you wrote that Walker Howard was coming. A little while later, I'm not picking on you because I've been there. This sucks from a journalism standpoint. A little while later, you found out that he's not coming. His dad told you that. What happened?
You know, I'm not sure what happened, but I can say on authority that, you know, a week ago before the story had come out, so the story was posted November 1st, a week earlier I had heard from one source that visit was in the works, and part of that was that, you know, Walker Howard, who's the number two pro-style quarterback in the country, and obviously an LSU legacy. His father played at LSU and had some success there. And Walker is an absolutely fantastic high school quarterback. And he's just one of those new mold Kyler Murray. You know, he's 6'1". He's not 6'4", but he moves really well and keeps his eyes downfield and has a rocket kind of arm. So all those traits get you excited about his future. You know, he committed to LSU really early on. You know, and when things opened, you know, when things started getting a little crazy around Coach O and the coaching search, they started looking at Notre Dame, and quietly, you know, there's been contact with Ole Miss. Jeff Lebby has been at the forefront, like he is with most quarterbacks, and you know, in addition to people in the Howard camp, you know, I know that from quarterbacks and offensive recruits. That I've got a chance to speak to are very high on Jeff Lebby. And while this visit was scheduled, I can assure you of that. It's not going to take place now. It begs me to think that, you know, LSU has a policy. And I kind of thought this might have been out the door with Coach O on his way out the door that, you know, committed guys cannot go visit rival SEC schools while they're committed. Hence Jacoby Matthews, the five-star safety from Ponchatoula, decommitting to go visit A&M for the pool party over the summer. That's just not what they do in Baton Rouge. I thought there might be an exception with Walker, who Notre Dame was the first time he ever went to another college campus since, I guess since his sophomore year, probably, or junior year at least. But, if Ole Miss is dead set on flipping Devin Brown, then that might be their top choice, but that doesn't mean that the dialogue with Walker Howard, like I suggested, they have to be doing their homework. You can't not sign a quarterback. And kind of like Devin Brown, as he evaluates the USC situation, they're going to hire a new head coach and a new offensive coordinator. And Walker Howard is paying very close attention to those same exact things at LSU. I think if they line up, he's an LSU legacy from Lafayette, Louisiana, so I think he'll end up there. But listen, if they hire JT Curtis and they're running the split back veer, maybe he will go visit Ole Miss. You might just go see it. But a lot of things still to be decided. But at least we do know for sure that Ole Miss is after Devin Brown. And they're certainly kicking the tires on Walker Howard.
Let's talk about LSU a minute. They're sitting here with this 14 commitments. They're ranked 11th in the rivals rankings. Ed Orgeron's out the door in 4 weeks. No one knows who they're going to hire. What do you hear about that search, and how is their recruiting class kind of hanging together? Or is it a lot of guys that are just sort of waiting to see what happens, or is this a bunch of guys that are going to LSU no matter what?
Yeah, I think it's a mix of both. You know, I think someone like Walker, it's just a rare situation. It's not like any other you know, 4 or 5 star quarterback committed. He's a legacy. So, you know, it's, you know, to pull any legacy off a commitment, you know, a lot of the things are aligned for them to go to that school. And like I said, it's, you know, if 90% of the way they feel good about it, they just have to see about the scheme, then, you know, I'd say the odds certainly favor LSU to hold on to their 5-star quarterback. And the same goes for their top 100 offensive tackle. Louisiana doesn't usually produce elite offensive linemen. This year, Neville has offensive tackle Will Campbell. He's been a standout for 4 years up there. He made the decision to commit to LSU in the spring, and he's a legacy. Doesn't open the door for other schools, but when you're a legacy, you know, your mind is basically made up when you're a kid wearing those jerseys a lot of the times, dreaming of playing those stadiums. And you know, similarly, you know, other kids just are from Louisiana. They grew up rooting for LSU. They had to earn their offer and camp there and work out for there and develop relationships. Meanwhile, a lot of out-of-state kids are saying, oh, no. You know, guys from Florida, guys from Georgia, guys from Alabama, you know, I expect them to either wait and see or just back off their commitment sooner rather than later. I'd imagine, you know, they're just taking their time and still visiting other schools because, you know, a lot of times as we get to Halloween, they've already kind of made their mind and they're expecting to sign. So this is really throwing a wrench in their plan. So you have to kind of feel for the families and the kids most importantly. But with that in mind, listen, they're going to hold on to a lot of the Louisiana kids with the right hire. They'll lose a few, you know, some of these kids are not only considering LSU and are automatically going to go there, but they're considering Georgia or Alabama or Texas A&M and Texas. And those are 4 other really good schools. And, you know, for each kid, you know, obviously the schools are different and the relationships and situations are different. To get to your first question, I've heard a lot of names over the last couple of weeks before Ed even lost his job. I actually got to see Ed over the weekend, and he was in really great spirits, which is great to see because he's still a good person. But the two names that I have heard, Mel Tucker is a name that I've heard a lot today, actually being on the phone with a bunch of people. Obviously coming off of just a colossal signature victory at Michigan State, and the timing of that could not have worked out better for whatever Mel Tucker's agent wants to ask of LSU. And the second, which is the name that I was hearing buzzing before Ed actually got fired, was Lincoln Riley at OU with the intent that LSU was going to sell him on coming to the SEC. You know, you're coming regardless. You know, here's Louisiana to recruit. I heard somewhere upwards of $12 million per year.
Wow.
And you say we got the hogs in the trenches that you can really win in the SEC. And that's kind of been Lincoln's bugaboo in all those playoff, you know, semifinal games throughout the years. So I don't know if either one is leaning that way or not, or just, you know, they'll move on. But from what I also understand, Scott Woodward is a very aggressive AD. I don't think I'm breaking any news there. But he has reached out to prominent coaches across the country, guys that you didn't think that he would probably reach out to. I think it's also been reported, not by me by any means, that he's gone up into the NFL realm to check on some candidates. So it seems like it's a pretty expansive search. You know, I don't know how many people that he's reached out to are super interested, but like anything, you know, anytime the right hire will ultimately indicate what's going to happen with this recruiting class, and the wrong hire will have the same effect. So a lot to be seen over here in the SEC territory over the next couple of weeks.
What did you read into what Dan Mullen said yesterday? He got so defensive about recruiting. Obviously, their recruiting is not where you probably need it to be to compete for a national championship. That's the expectation there. Were you as kind of taken aback by it as I was? Where I listened to that and I said, "Uh-oh, that's a sign of a guy in trouble."
Yeah, it's almost like, I don't want to say you're coming up with an excuse. You know, I know that we spoke about LSU, and you and I both know that I used to be on the LSU beat, and there was a time when Ed first got the job and he lost to Troy, and he talked about, you know, not recruiting the right players to you know, and when he lost to Mississippi State, not having the right offensive and defensive linemen, and, you know, it kind of, that's the only thing that I can really liken to what Dan Mullen was saying. And if you're the head coach of Florida, you know, you have all the resources available to you. It's one of the best jobs in all of college football because of the resources, because of the recruiting base around you. And they were just in the SEC championship game last year. And, you know, and when I was watching that Alabama-Florida game, you know, I don't get to always catch these big CBS games, but I was happy to catch that one. It reminded me of when I used to watch those Saban teams against Tim Tebow. It was so close. A little bit unorthodox Florida offense, but still effective. And to see where they are a month later after getting, you know, losing to LSU and half of the LSU team, and now just getting, you know, coming up with excuses at the podium, I don't know, you know, if they're going to fire Mullen now. I mean, it wouldn't be surprising based on the rest of college football, but after you make those comments, I'd expect you to go out on the recruiting trail. You got 6 weeks. Why don't you make some noise? Because you're kind of putting yourself out there when you do something, when you say something like that.
Well, you look at the league. I mean, right now these are just rivals rankings. So take that for what anybody wants to take them to be worth. And I don't mean that as a criticism, but some people are like, oh, the rankings don't matter. And some people think the rankings are like almost a biblical sign. But you've got Georgia at one and Alabama at two and LSU is 11, Texas A&M's 13, Missouri is 16, Arkansas 17, Kentucky 19, South Carolina 22. I'm naming teams before I get to Florida. Mississippi State's at 26, Ole Miss is at 29, Tennessee's at 32. I mean, that won't cut it at Florida, where all those teams are beating you in recruiting, or is perceived to be beating you in recruiting. And you look on the field, they're 4-4. They lost LSU. They lost to Georgia. They lost to Kentucky. I mean, they've got L's on the field as well. So it's not just the recruiting trail where they're getting beat.
Would you ever think that Florida State, and Miami would all be at this middling level at this point in the year, and none of them have these elite classes in that state?
No, and it's why I'm really interested in at least two of those jobs at this point. I mean, I keep thinking something at Miami. I keep thinking they'll announce that, hey, we're going to hang on to Manny Diaz. Miami's 57th in the rivals rankings. You know, I keep thinking something will give there, but that's a job that obviously, given Lane Kiffin's situation, it's not a job that I think he would leave for, but I think if a job were to open up, that would be one that people would talk about. People would talk about UCLA. If it opened up, people have talked about LSU, though I think you and I both believe that Lane Kiffin's not very high on the LSU list, if he's on it at all.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't either. So let me get back to Ole Miss for a minute. It's obviously we're I don't know how many months away, somewhere between 4 and maybe 8 months away from an Arch Manning decision. You've followed that as closely as anybody. I think you've done a great job covering him. You've given him the space that he deserves as a young person. You've kept up with his coach. I think you've positioned yourself to be able to really work that story when it intensifies in the spring. What are your thoughts on where things stand right now with Arch Manning in general and with Ole Miss specifically?
Yeah, and listen, you know, we have not sat down with Arch yet. That is definitely on the agenda in the next couple of weeks. Newman is preparing for week 10 this week. After a couple of big, you know, high atmosphere, you know, big public TV games, so I think they're enjoying a little bit of quiet, trying to wrap up the regular season, and then Arch just has to go on probably his most pressure laden playoff journey, I think, yet, because now he's a junior and the expectations are rising. But he's went on 5 visits this fall, and in talking to people familiar with the situation, I don't think that he's going to have a decision made before the end of this year. I mean, I could be wrong, and I would not rule out anything because everything is so close to the vest. So they do such a good job at that. But I really don't believe that he's close to making a decision. I think, if anything, I think he has been able to rule out a team or maybe even more, but at least, you know, start kind of eliminating teams slowly. Or maybe at least favoring some over the others, rather, might be a better way to put it. And I think that he's starting to develop a pecking order. I'm not going to take a stab at guessing the pecking order for the sanctity of this, but I think you watch a college football season, you're bound to to get some thoughts. I mean, he's a football junkie. I think I said this to you on the podcast we did last time, but he's a football junkie. So if that's what Arch cares about, right? And, you know, his family, I think they're like normal two parents trying to make sure their son is going to college in a place where he's going to be taken care of and all the resources are around him and, you know, just doing their due diligence as normal two parents can be, manning. But Arch, from a football sense, he's been all about relationships. And if you go from team to team, there is like a point man and a quarterback that he is like completely dialed in on else everywhere. If you start at Georgia, he's very close to Todd Monken. He's very close to Coach Hankton. Kirby Smart went to see him this year. And he loves Todd Monken's offense. And I think that Georgia visit was really awe-inspiring for him. And now they're the number one team in the country. And if you look at that O-line, they got a kid from New Orleans at center, and they are big. And I think if you're Arch, and this is just completely hypothetical, Newman's season, you know, they played that big game against Tampa Berkeley, and they had the Notre Dame edge rusher come in. I bet he's really interested in maybe some 6'6", 300-pound tackles on both sides of him before he goes to the next level. He went to Texas. He's got a great relationship with Sark. I think arguably his best relationship with a head coach in general in this process. And Sark, we don't need to go into great detail that he's a great offensive mind. Everyone knows that who's watched him, you know, coach over the last decade plus. And I think he's, even though the results on the field aren't exactly convincing by any means, you know, Arch is paying attention to what this offense looks like. And this offense has looked really good at on occasion. He's got a great relationship with not only Sark, but Milwee. And, you know, like any other human being, the family really likes Austin. It's really hard to blame them. It's a beautiful city. And I think Texas is squarely in the mix. And they've been they got a really good group of quarterbacks in the 2023 class in the state in Texas. And they're still making Arch a priority. And I think the buzz there is definitely legitimate to a certain extent. He went to Alabama for the Ole Miss game. Obviously, that was Alabama looking like the machine that Alabama is. Listen, every time that I hear that Arch or his coaches or Cooper, I mean, talk to Nick Saban, who did the Manning cast with his uncles, and I think he said I can't wait to coach a Manning one day or something. I missed it. You know, Alabama, kind of like Georgia, you see everything is in place for you to kind of step in. You know, I've heard some people say that Alabama is too much of a front runner for Arch to want to go to. I don't know if Arch is really putting too much emphasis on that. He's a 16 or 17-year-old, really laid-back kid, and I think he's going to go wherever he thinks is the best fit. I don't think he's trying to take on the public perception of his decision. I think he's just going to make his best decision that he can make. And that visit to Tuscaloosa, from all things I heard, was really great. The Ole Miss game, I heard, got a little bit emotional for him. You know, obviously honoring Eli and being there with his family. And, you know, I watched a little bit of that game as well on TV. And, you know, listen, Lane Kiffin, for all the things you want to botch him about with his class and where it's ranked and why doesn't he have a quarterback, he had Manning painted in the end zone, which is about as cool of a recruiting technique as I could think of.
Yeah.
As a 31-year-old adult who has already went to college and is done with all of the fees, and that is a cool thing to see. And I'm pretty sure that Arch felt very, very special, but and maybe overwhelmed. But he, like I said, he's a cool kid, and I think, you know, he knows what this moment means for his family in the big picture. And I think Ole Miss is very much in it. And a big reason why is like I said earlier, Jeff Levy is, if you're talking about Steve Sarkisian as a great offensive mind, put Levy in that same conversation, and we'll take it from there. And then he obviously just went to Clemson. He's got a great relationship with Coach Strader. You know, Clemson might have been a team I would have said at the forefront maybe, you know, a year or two ago. I'm not exactly sure where it stands. I've heard some conflicting things, but, you know, because it's an Ole Miss podcast, it's right now, I think Ole Miss is cemented as a contender. I think they always have been, and they were never going to be out of it. But you and I have had private conversations that, you know, are they a contender because they're Ole Miss, or are they a contender because they fit the boxes that Arch is looking for? Arch and his mom and his dad and his grandpa. But it's Arch's decision. Don't get me wrong. And, and everyone has been very open and honest about that. And I think Ole Miss certainly checked the boxes beforehand. And then during the visit, he got a fantastic experience. What I think is next, and I don't know this for sure, I think he might return to a couple of these schools. I'm curious to know if he would go see another out-of-state school. Does he go to LSU if they make a new hire and explore it and talk to them? Do any of the coaches at any of these teams change teams and are elsewhere next year? He's been very cognizant of the coaching carousel since he was a freshman or a sophomore.
Sure, he's lived it. Yeah.
He knows it better. His parents, his family, rather, is like the first family of the NFL. And like college, the NFL is a coaching carousel every year, right after, you know, at a certain point in the calendar. And he's put a big emphasis on these relationships. They all have to line up. He does not feel rushed to make a decision, but I can assure you it'll be, you know, sometime, whether it's in the spring, whether he wants to extend it out to the summer. I think this fall went a long way in helping him kind of establish contenders or maybe even eliminate contenders. I don't know. But he's certainly moving the process along. We'll see if other teams can or will enter the mix. But we have an idea of who is in the mix. And I think he's been able to take this process to the next step in his own mind, in his own decision-making process. Over the last few weeks,
if you made me guess, and again, this is a guess, but like you, I've talked to people, I would guess today, if you maybe put a pecking order on it, I would say that Texas has a slight lead. I think it's really slight. I don't think it's as big as some of the Texas media make it out to be. I think it's a really small league. If it were a lead, if it were an election, it's way too close to call. None of the networks would be declaring a victor at this point.
Well, what I can tell you, Neil, because it's something that gets spoken about by me quite a bit, is Texas has a fantastic group of media members covering the team, covering recruiting. You know, like they do a fantastic job, and there's a lot of them because it's Texas. There's been a lot of Texas media at Neumann in the month of October. You know, I happen to live in New Orleans, so I do feel like I have great access to that program in general. And I have been blessed to have great access to Arch and know a lot of the things that go on in the program related to and not related to the Mannings. I can tell you that, you know, every single year, you know, Coach Stewart at Neumann, you know, comes up with a slogan. He's done that since I was working at NOLA.com, you know, previewing their semifinal matchup against Notre Dame, you know. It's just a part of the Neumann culture. And, you know, Stewart and Coach Sark have a great relationship, and he stole the all gas, no brakes slogan. I got to be honest. It's a fantastic slogan. And I think every time a Texas media member has seen that, they've just overprocessed it. You know, it's a really good slogan. I don't think it'll be the slogan next year, you know. And I think, you know, obviously we're getting intel in and out. And he did make the visit, and the visit went really well from all that I understand. But I do believe that perhaps the contingent of Texas media that happened to go to New Orleans to see and interview and talk to Arch about his visits to Austin might have a role in maybe the public perception of where Texas is in this whole big picture. Am I crazy?
No, I think you're right. I was going to say I'd put them in a slight lead, but I think both Ole Miss and Georgia are really in it, like big time. The question I have with Ole Miss, and I'm putting you on the spot here because I'm going to let you either be the good guy or the bad guy or somewhere in between. The question I have with Ole Miss is that I continue to hear, first, number one, he is a very strong, and you touched on this, the emotional reaction to that game and to his uncle having his jersey retired and his grandfather being there. And his grandfather's an absolute legend at Ole Miss. I mean, the speed limits and the whole deal. And their name is everywhere at Ole Miss, as it should be. I mean, they've probably the two most famous football players to ever play there.
100%.
So I'm sure that means something to him. You know, they have a house here or a home.
As pure human beings, regardless of their last name.
Like, yeah, of course.
Your grandpa, that's your uncle.
Yeah, like, of course. Yeah, right. And his dad. You know, his Cooper signed here.
And his dad.
Yeah. So I mean, there's a lot there. I think Ole Miss is very much in it. I think Georgia's very much in it. I continue to hear that over and over to the point that I believe it to be true. I think Clemson has faded some from what I've heard. And at the end of the day, I don't think he's going to Alabama. And I'll say this, one of my main sources on this has just been consistent going, he's going to go to Alabama. And I just don't think that to be the case. Regardless, I think Ole Miss is in it, but I do wonder, because I continue to hear that the other draw with Ole Miss is that he and his family really like Jeff Lebby, the offensive coordinator here. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that and this isn't a knock on Jeff or Lane or Jeff's relationship with Lane or Lane's relationship with Jeff or anybody's relationship with anyone. I don't know that I would put a lot of money on both Lane Kiffin and Jeff Lebby being here next year. I just think Jeff's going to have other opportunities. And I mean, you know, there's a lot of jobs that are open in Texas right now. You've got the job at Texas Tech that's open. You've got the job at TCU that's open. The Briles family has, a tremendous amount of Texas. When I say Texas,
and
state
one of
Texas
those
contacts
could open up the SMU job.
Yeah, it could open up the SMU job. Who knows? Luke Fickell could leave Cincinnati to go somewhere, and a guy like Jeff Lebby would be, you know, on that list. Mm-hmm. I mean, who knows? Like, what might happen? A coordinator job might open up. Bill O'Brien might leave. Alabama to go to be a head coach somewhere. I'm just spitballing at this point.
Right.
And maybe Nick Saban goes after Jeff Lebby. I mean, I've heard that rumor. There's so much out there. So the question is if Jeff Lebby were to leave, nothing malicious here. He just takes another job. If Jeff Lebby left, how much, if at all, does that hurt Ole Miss with Arch Manning, in your opinion? And I know you don't necessarily know the answer.
Yeah, it would definitely be one of the more curious developments in this recruitment, because kind of what we were saying is, to this point, no one has really changed jobs yet in the middle of Arch's, not only his recruitment, but in, you know, we're not saying he's on the cusp of making a decision. He's nowhere, he's not close to it yet, but he is gearing up to eventually make a decision. Like, he has an endpoint in mind. So, you know, I think we talked about, Ole Miss checks all of these boxes. I think he would have to re-examine the program. You know, assuming if Lebby left or if Kiffin left to take another head coaching job or a professional job, like, that's all TBD for now. I think he would reassess what Ole Miss is. Obviously, I don't think they would be eliminated at any point in his decision. Obviously, Arch will not have hats or caps at his announcement ceremony, if he even has an announcement ceremony. But, you know, for all intents and purposes, there, in theory, there would always be an Ole Miss cap there, because we just talked about the storied history of his family in Oxford. What it would do is, I'd be curious to know if wherever Lebby went, maybe that's a very strong relationship. Lebby appeals to quarterbacks all over, and if he has the attention of Arch Manning, I'd be curious to know if, you know, if he got hired as Alabama's OC, if he got hired as Cincinnati's head coach, or, you know, TCU's head. I'd just be curious to know if that might motivate, you know, maybe, I think the dominoes might have to line up. You know, if he ended up at Cincinnati, I really don't think Arch Manning is going to wind up at Cincinnati. But if he did wind up at a Clemson or on Georgia's staff, on Alabama's staff, on LSU's staff, you know, or stay put, I think it could. I don't. It maybe leads to another visit. It could only help to add Jeff Lebby to the equation if you're recruiting Arch Manning. I mean, the same way he's got a close relationship with Todd Monken or Brandon Streeter or AJ Milwee. Like, those are key figures, and this is the first coaching swap that's happening. But I really, you know, long story short, which I definitely took the long route as tradition. I don't think Ole Miss is ever going to be fully out of the race unless something crazy happened, like unforeseen. Even if it was just Lebby leaving, I fully would think that Arch is, because of the sheer sense that we know, you and I both know from good sourcing, that you know, he felt it in his heart when he got to see his uncle retire there. I don't think they would automatically be out of contention, just like, you know, Alabama losing its OC potentially. I think he would have to assess, like we said, he's not a quick twitch thinker where he's going to, you know, change his mind and cut someone and put out a top eight and cut someone and make it a top seven. He's not like that. He's very calculated. And I think he would just assess and assess until he found the best, you know, until he eventually makes his decision.
Last thing on Arch, then I'll ask you about one or two guys, then I'll let you go, and I really appreciate your time. What kind of coattails could Arch Manning have among other recruits, or is that a thing of the past given the social media presence that everybody has now?
No, you know what? You're someone else had asked me this. I won't use names or networks, but I'll definitely say it was the Texas media, because they were curious, like, you know, if Texas landed Arch Manning, you know, it's a major destination. I can tell you that I don't feel as if it would be a regional thing. You know, like Louisiana is, you know, it's a pretty tight-knit group. And if Arch Manning were to go to Ole Miss or to Clemson or somewhere in between, I would expect a lot of offensive skill players and a lot of offensive linemen to say, hey, I want to play with this guy. Like, you know, even though Newman's had a couple of losses this year and he's been watched on television, and both have been losses to, you know, surprisingly, he is a fantastic player. And it's not an accident that every network that exists has him in, if not number one like us, number two, and number one amongst quarterbacks. If you're a receiver, you know, if you just look at it from the purest football sense, and that's the only thing I'll go off of, is, right, you know, last year he had A.J. Johnson, a four-star receiver. He's now in Florida as his primary weapon. And A.J., you know, making plays over the middle, stretching the field over the top vertically, just being a go-to for Arch Manning, where you're getting precise, accurate passes right as you get out of your breaks over and over again. Like, who wouldn't want that? Now, you know, he's playing with Will Randall, who's in his class, a pretty good tight end in his own right. And Will is not a generational talent, but he's really, really good Power 5 tight end. And Will benefits from having an elite five-star quarterback that sees the field and goes through his progressions like an NFL quarterback. I mean, so if you're the best slot receiver in the country and Arch ends up at Alabama and Alabama's recruiting you, and you're choosing between Alabama and Ohio State, well, you have a tough decision. You can either play with Arch and at Alabama, you know, or you can go to Ohio State and learn under Brian Hartline. I mean, none of these kids are going to make bad decisions, but I can't help if you're a receiver and you know the history of even if you don't know the stories that we've heard about Arch at Newman. And there's a great story by ESPN from a couple of weeks ago about what a student of the game he is. And we've written about it a ton too. So I implore people to learn a little bit about Arch and what is actually important to him if you're interested in his recruitment. And I think it would work vice versa. Man, who wouldn't want to play with that kind of talent? So I think it will elevate whichever school he lands. And assuming he does it, you know, whether it's, you know, January through, you know, April or May of the spring, I'd imagine to see a trickle-down effect in the recruiting trail.
Hey, last thing. We started with the Lafayette kid. We're going to finish with one. Jordan Allen was committed to Penn State. He took an official visit to Ole Miss. I haven't talked to him since then. I don't know whether you have. What are you hearing on his recruiting?
Yeah, well, I mean, he knew that if he was going to visit Ole Miss, Penn State would go in a different direction, much like the rule I talked about, you know, 45 minutes ago with LSU. If you're committed to Penn State, you want to visit another school, they move on. Jordan did that. I'd have to put Ole Miss at the forefront if that's the decision that he's making, knowing that going in. You know, he's an interesting recruit. He doesn't have elite speed, but he's very physical. He actually shut down the aforementioned A.J. Johnson in the playoffs when they played at Newman last year, which was a really good game during COVID. And Jordan has a lot of upside. You know, one school that has always been in the mix with him and always kind of waiting for him whenever he would kind of look back at them was Louisville. And I still wouldn't rule them out, and their success with a couple of Louisiana DBs is certainly attractive to Jordan. But yeah, I mean, going to Ole Miss, like you said, they got a couple of dominoes that still need to fall, and I would definitely put Jordan in that mix. The only thing keeping me is you know, he's one of those Louisiana kids that has wanted an LSU offer and hasn't been able to get it. I don't foresee LSU offering. Obviously, I don't know who the next head coach is going to be, so I can't tell what they're looking for in their corners or safeties. But right now, I would say Ole Miss or Louisville for Jordan Allen, and he's a talented player, and I think under the right coaching staff, they can get some good use out of him.
Sam, as always, man, I really appreciate the time very much. Thanks so much for joining us.
Absolutely, Neil.
Big thanks to Sam Spiegelman for his time today on the Soft Verbal Podcast. We'll be back in the next week or so. That's my goal. Ole Miss hosts Liberty this weekend. They get ready to get Texas A&M next weekend. I expect the Texas A&M weekend to be a much bigger recruiting weekend than the one coming up against Liberty. Texas A&M game obviously is a bigger game. It's at 6 o'clock at night. There's going to be a lot more people in town, a lot more buzz than this weekend against Liberty, where I get the sense that the hope is just to survive the game, get through it, and get ready for a big SEC West showdown against the Aggies. So we'll be back next week to preview that weekend, try to have a list of visitors to you for the Liberty game here in the next few days, and really start focusing in on who's coming in for that Texas A&M game, be the home finale. Well, actually, not the home finale. Vanderbilt's a week later, but the last big high-profile premier game of the season at home for Ole Miss as they get into the month of November and get closer to the signing period and all the things that come with that. So, again, thanks to Sam. Don't forget, this is brought to you by the College Corner. It's collegecornerstore.com. They've been great to us. Please remember them if you're in the Jackson area. It's in Ridgeland next to Fleet Feet in Flowood. It's next to Half Shell. You can also go visit them on Facebook and Instagram. Scott and the people there at the College Corner have been super to us. So please remember, as you get started with some of your holiday shopping and that kind of thing, check out collegecornerstore.com. You'll be very glad you did. So again, thanks to Sam. I'll be back with you at some point next week with another edition of the Soft Verbal Podcast. Until then, take care.